Greetings and welcome. This is Tom Heshen from Riverbend Capital Advisors. I'm joined for a discussion about the municipal bond market today with John Hallisey of John Hallisey Consulting, longtime friend and former colleague of mine from Merrill Lynch days. John was the head of municipal credit research at Merrill. John, welcome. Good to be with you.
Pleasure to be here with you, Tom.
So, John, thinking back over our combined 100 years or so of municipal bond experience, maybe not quite 100, but feels like after this year, do you recall a year similar to 2022?
Well, Tom, in my over four decades of being in this business, certainly been through difficult times before. Recessionary periods clearly come to mind. And certainly higher rate periods. You know, 1982 was a very challenging year. Short muni rates for like 1 year paper were well into the double digits, like 12.5% or more. So in that regard, we've had more difficult times from the rate perspective. But I think this time what we've been really dealing with, other than the extraordinary circumstance of the pandemic, is the volatility. I don't remember the volatility day to day being so acute.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, I feel like in relatively recent times, 2008 was the worst year of muni performance, which I believe market was down, depending on what benchmark you look at, you know, about 3.9 or 4%. Here we are down about 12% at this point in 2022. It's also remarkable to think about where we are, how quickly we've moved. For example, in 1 year, munis, at the beginning of the year, the yield was about 20 basis points. Now, 3% is very doable, giving, you know, a taxpayer in a high bracket about a 5% taxable equivalent yield. That's really extraordinary. Thinking back over, you know, how we struggled for the 2 years prior to get, you know, even a much over 1% in 10-year, you know, high-grade munis, now well into the threes, you know, longer bonds, 4% tax-exempt. Again, just unthinkable a year ago, and yet here we are. And, you know, it begs the question, how did we get here? You know, obviously, the Fed being a bit offsides coming into the year, embarking on aggressive hikes in the Fed funds rate, exacerbated by inflationary dynamics, supply chain problems, the Russia-Ukraine war impact on a number of commodities, you know, right up to the recent OPEC output cuts. And, you know, it's just been one challenge after another. I feel like every day there's another Fed governor reiterating that the Fed is going to remain hawkish and it's going to continue raising rates until inflation is brought under control.
Of course, Tom, we've been through a real yield adjustment period here with all the Fed actions. And, you know, the 2-year Treasury is now at 4.43. And, you know, fortunately, the municipal yield curve is still, you know, fairly positive, and I think we've discussed it. It is more flat in some respects, and certainly not inverted. But that hasn't been a reason for people to necessarily hang in. We've been experiencing some pretty hefty municipal outflows from the mutual funds.
Yeah, I mean, well over $100 billion at this point. Just this past week, an astounding $5 billion in outflows from muni mutual funds, and you know that certainly weighs on the market. There's been times throughout the year where some of the seasonality is traditional in the muni market has been exacerbated by fund outflows. You know, back in the March, April, typically not a great period of muni performance. You know, fund outflows were very heavy at that point, and you know, that combined with some of the heavier supply in the market and some of the selling pressure related to tax payments for April 15th, you know, that's pretty typical. This time of the year, you know, it usually is a time of higher supply. I think a lot of issuers are on the sidelines given the volatility and how far rates have moved. But, you know, the fund outflows continue, and, you know, that certainly weighs on performance and, you know, is contributing to, you know, the upward pressure in yields. So it's been a remarkable environment and very challenging. Like you said, the volatility is there on a daily basis. You know, until there's a bit of more stability in treasury rates, I just don't envision that munis are going to fare any better. I think we'll be in this environment for a while.
Well, you did mention one wild card about supply. I read earlier today that the number of CUSIP requests is down like 20% year to date for municipals. And that is not the case, apparently, in corporates, you know, where the requests are up for the year. So issuers are definitely responding to these higher rates and are being a little bit more cautious about when they might actually tap the market. So, you know, the old saying in the muni bond market is you got to buy the bonds when they're there. So to the extent they're coming to market and, you know, they're a little bit more favorable yield-wise, it's not the time to hesitate to get involved.
And as far as new issue supply and just the need for states and municipalities to be raising money, you know, it kind of goes back to the fundamentals in muni credit. The expectation right in the aftermath of COVID that tax receipts were going to plummet didn't really materialize. As we know, in many sectors, receipts remained strong. States and municipalities of all kinds benefited from federal assistance through the CARES Act, and a lot of them tightened up expenses, funded pensions, and were able to improve their fiscal positions. What do you see at this point as the outlook for muni credit as we head into 2023?
Reprise a bit. I mean, it's remarkable how well muni credit has held up with the onset of the pandemic and then beyond. And of course, all the federal largesse has helped bolster muni budgets, as you have suggested. And of course, that's now running its course. And what we're starting to see is some indication that there will be some softening in revenue performance, particularly at the state level, but perhaps also at the local level. And where we see that softness is not in employment, because employment is still pretty robust, but we're starting to hear more about a retail sales slowdown and how holiday spending has started earlier, but it may not be as robust this year as it's been in the past. And of course, the second largest revenue source for most states is the sales tax. And in some cases, it's the primary receipt as well. So there's some sensitivity there. And of course, the whole capital gains consideration, the states with considerable wealth are a little bit more prone to what happens in terms of people both exercising options and taking capital gains from year to year. And of course, with some of the significant losses in the stock market this year, one would expect that the capital gains are not going to be as robust and will not be contributing quite as much to the personal income take. So there are some early warning signs there. I mean, in terms of the local property tax, those also held up remarkably well through the pandemic. And of course, We've had such a run-up in housing values that anything that turned over came on the rolls at higher valuations. So I don't see any danger, at least in the near term there, but housing sales are slowing as well.
And what about some of the transportation revenue sectors like toll roads and airports?
What's really interesting about the transportation aspect is, you know, mass transit, of course, for those jurisdictions that have mass transit systems, were really very affected by the pandemic with ridership plummeting and with the whole work from home aspect. And of course, many central cities in particular are trying to get workers to return to the office in part to help get the mass transit systems back to levels that are more acceptable from the operational standpoint. What's also interesting is that the toll roads might have had an early jolt, but they've come back remarkably well. And in some cases, the toll activity is either as good as it was in 19 or it's even higher, because a lot of people opted not to take mass transit and instead got back in their cars. Now, of course, another factor over time is how much will tolls be going up. But at least that's been the near-term effect. So toll roads are in pretty good shape. The other sector, which is related to transportation, of course, airports. Again, we had quite a decline in activity. And now we're understanding that traffic has really come back, and advanced bookings for the holidays are looking pretty good, according to some of the airline executives. So I would expect that the airports are going to be doing fairly well. And of course, airports have maintained their balance sheets very well and have a lot of cash on hand to sustain their operations. So they're in relatively good shape, despite the early dip in traffic.
And one more sector I'm interested in your thoughts on is higher education. I mean, given the changing, you know, demographics, you know, small private colleges that have smaller endowments, that's an area that, you know, we've tended to avoid in our portfolios. But what's your feeling on the whole sector, large, small, private, public?
Yeah, well, you really do have to split it into private and public. And I think the emphasis now is on affordability. Some of the tuitions at the privates are just so high, not even including room and board. You know, families have to make major decisions to commit to going to some of the institutions. Of course, there's always going to be strong demand for, you know, the elite privates and the flagship state universities. State universities have been doing okay in terms of attracting students, but they too have had to raise tuition over time. And generally, tuitions have been moving faster than inflation and have been doing that for a long time. So there are a lot of calls to reform higher ed and take a look if it can be more efficient and what have you. And I think that will continue. And of course, the student loan forgiveness is playing out as well. For those institutions that have endowments, clearly the endowments had terrific returns last year and are struggling more with the results for this year. And when I say this year, you know, most institutions end their fiscal year June 30. So some of the early reports are coming in on how the endowments have done. And for the most part, the returns have been negative for the year. It's more extraordinary for someone to be outperforming. So the ability to draw on endowment is going to be somewhat curtailed, at least in the near term here, until markets recover. But higher ed is clearly a very creditworthy sector for those institutions that have, you know, strong demand and some tuition flexibility.
Well, I certainly have some perspective on the tuition discussion with three kids in college, one who just graduated, another one will be there soon enough. It definitely impacts the Hessian family.
Well, that's why we need to do more podcasts.
we will. So as we move into the end of the year and into 2023, you know, here we are with, you know, an abundance of 3 and even 4% tax exempt yields in the muni market. You know, looking at, like I mentioned earlier, you know, 1 year, 3%, that's a 5% taxable equivalent for someone in a high bracket when you take into account, you know, the 3.8% Medicare surtax as well that muni interest is exempt from. You know, you could compare that with a 1 year treasury, say at 440, you know, that after tax, I think is around 260 or 270. So, you know, munis compare fairly favorably. You know, the muni curve is relatively flat, like we discussed. I mean, it's not inverted, but, you know, 2 to 10 year, maybe 25 basis points. You know, I think as we go forward, thinking about where on the curve to position, I mean, it certainly is tempting to say, we could only get 20 basis points on a 1 year a year ago, and now we can get 3%. That seems incredible. We might as well stay short and, you know, take advantage of the situation as things have changed. But I think there's also the consideration of, okay, so if we go out more further into long intermediate or longer bonds, you know, you can buy high quality bonds with, depending on the structure, perhaps 4% or more tax exempt. So when you get to that level, you're approaching 7% taxable equivalent yield for someone in a high bracket. Hard to call the top when it comes to yields. You know, we may have further to go, but might it make sense to lock in some of those higher yields if you can own a 15-year muni tax-free 4%? I don't know. I think that's worth consideration and probably worth participating in a measured way and see where it goes from here. But it certainly is more compelling than, you know, a one handle yield where we were, you know, less than a year ago.
Yeah, no question, Tom. You know, going forward too, I think we just have to keep an eye on pension funding levels. One thing we were talking about the endowments, but on the pension side that too, they have had a real challenge with the returns this past year. And of course, that's going to affect the level of contributions that localities have to make. You know, it's been a number of years now that people have focused on the pension aspect of muni credit. And I think that's going to come back to the forefront again. Fortunately, most places can handle a bump in contributions, but there might be a few that have more difficulty meeting those obligations.
As we move forward, I think caution on credit, caution on structure, duration, it's going to be interesting times for the foreseeable future. I look forward to experiencing it with you, and we will talk again in the near future. Thanks very much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for listening. If you have any questions or would like to discuss any of the topics we covered or anything related to the muni market, feel free to contact me, Tom Hessian, at Riverbend Capital Advisors. Thank you.